This is Paula Morell, and welcome to Tales from the South.
Why is there so much negativity? Confusion creates a frown. Why are we bound? Somebody tell me.
How's everybody doing tonight? How about tonight's music by Nikki Parrish? Y'all like Nikki? Among other things, Nikki Parrish was a three-time Apollo finalist and toured for 5 years with Grammy winner Smokey Norful as a background vocalist. You can find out more about Nikki on Facebook and Twitter. All right, well, welcome to a very special edition of Tales from the South, the third in our In Hate series, where Southerners bring their own true stories to life. We are on location in Argenta First Presbyterian Church in North Little Rock, Arkansas. Tales from the South is presented by Temenos Publishing Company and the Midnight Muse Writing Workshops, and I'm your host, Paula Martin Morell. On my right here, playing for us tonight, is blues guitarist Mark Simpson. Mark wrote our theme music and plays for us live each week. And how about our set back here behind us? We all like our set? We are thrilled to once again partner with and feature esteemed Arkansas artist V.L. Cox's End Hate conceptual art series, based on the labels we once placed on doors from our shameful past, and to remind us how everyone deserves the right to walk through any and all doors with dignity and respect. Our listeners can find out more about the End Hate series and V.L. at her website, greatfineart.com. All right, are y'all ready for some Southern-style storytelling? Tonight is our third End Hate show, this one focused on discrimination, because making someone feel less than you is wrong, no matter who you or they are. All stories are true and told by the Southerners who live them. Tonight, Vietnam vet Carlos Cervantes is asked a question so offensive it stops him in his tracks. And we'll end the night with transgender teenager Adrian Jones surrounded by middle school bullies.
Good evening. Hate. That is a very, very four-letter word that's negative, and it hurts a lot of people. Mine came in 2010, and I will tell you what happened. October the 11th, 2010. It's a date that still makes my blood boil. It was a day that I was talked to as if I didn't belong in this very country that I was born in, fought for, and loved more than anything else. As a young Mexican Latino kid growing up in South Texas in the 40s and 50s, with four other siblings and me being the oldest, life in our strong barrio culture was a life of gangster survival. Conflict was constant between us and the poor whites in our poor neighborhood. But we always managed to end the day on top and still be friends. Call it luck or just pure madness. We learn at a young age how to baffle our opponents into submission. But not once did anyone ever ask us if we were here illegally or to see our so-called papers to prove that we were citizens of this country. It was a known fact to them that we belong here just as much as they did. The only issues they had with us was that we spoke and acted and dressed differently to them. Plus, we were not afraid to settle our differences fist to fist. Yes. The next 30 years had me in all kinds of other conflicts. I survived other gangster wars in the mean streets of East LA and into the jungles of Vietnam, where I served with an elite airborne unit for two tours as an RTO. Through luck or the grace of God, I again managed to survive and come back to a country that was starting to break down, break apart through hatred, and was no way to stop the disease from taking hold. Even so, I was somehow never directly assaulted by cruel and demeaning discrimination, even then. Then came 2010. It was a campaign year, and we were in it to win and get our Democratic candidate elected as our next U.S. Congresswoman, Miss Joyce Elliott. On that special day, the whole available volunteers for a candidate were starting to gather at AETN, Arkansas Public Television Network, in Conway, Arkansas, for one of the debates. There were two other candidates, a Republican and a candidate from the Green Party, also involved in the debate. Once we arrived at the location, the Republican Party was already set up outside with their own posters and banners and marching to the tune of the Republican Party. We started to get settled in ourselves, and really, it was very calm considering there were Republicans and respectable among all of us. But then it fell apart real fast. As I was walking up and down with my poster along with my friend, Ms. Patton, we were just chit-chatting, nothing special. I noticed this old lady standing in the hot sun with a walker and a boot on one of her feet and looking very, very hot and uncomfortable. As a gentleman, believe it or not, I walk over to her and ask if there was anything I can do to help her. Anything. Miss Patton was standing right next to me on my right side and was listening to our conversation. As I offered to get her some water, or maybe help her move over to the shade, even though she was from the other party, I felt compelled to at least offer my kindness to her. She said to me, "Why, thank you. I am just fine. I can manage for now." Then she looked up at me and asked me this question without any hesitation. "By the way, are you an illegal? Do you have papers to be here in this country?" I was caught off guard. And so was my friend, Ms. Patton. Even her jaws dropped. And it's very hard for Ms. Patton's jaws to drop. She had to catch her breath. I recomposed myself real fast. I looked at the lady and said in a very stern voice, Did you just profile me? Did you just ask me for papers? She looked at me one more time and said, well, do you? You're kind. That key word, kind. Your kind needs to get papers. Or go back to where you came from if you're here illegally. I just about lost it. I said to her, ma'am, I really struggled to say that word, ma'am, I really did. I'm a Vietnam veteran. Pointing to my airborne pin on my lapel, which I always wear. And I'm fifth generation Tejano or Texan. I don't need no papers. I don't. How dare you ask a veteran if we have papers? I looked at her one more time and I said, how about you? Do you have papers? How many generations has your family been here in this country? She wouldn't answer me. By that time, my voice was getting louder and she was getting paranoid for my outburst. Latinos have a strange outburst. Then she said one more time, well, we have to ask. Too many of your kind, that key word again, too many of your kind here and taking all these free handouts from our government, and it's time to put a stop to it. I look at her up close and very personal, and said very loudly, ma'am, you disgust me. Your hatred makes me sick to my stomach. By then, her party was not liking to what was going on between me and her, her kind. My friend, Ms. Patton, was speechless and just could not believe what had just happened. My hands were trembling with anger as we walked away, and the lady disappeared later on from the area up front. Yes, 67 years of living in this country, and I had finally, been asked if I had papers to show I'm a citizen of this country. A country that I have given some blood, a country that I have given some sweat, and a country that I have thousands of tears. I've cried thousands of tears for this country to belong here. Let me tell you, it was a shot in the gut. The rest of the day was uneventful, and I stood alongside my friends and countrymen as our political candidates debated the issues. But when I think of that day, I think of that misguided woman's questions and her inability to see me as a person, and the hatred in her eyes. That's the kind of person she is. I'll never forget it. May God take care of all of us. Amen.
The eldest of five boys, Carlos Cervantes, was born in South Texas and served two tours in Vietnam with an elite airborne unit. He has been the state director for the League of United Latin American Citizens for the state of Arkansas and president with the advisory board of the FBI Civil Rights Working Group. He is currently employed as a county veteran service officer attached to the VA to help any and all veterans in need of any type of benefits that are entitled to them. In our final story of the night here at Tales from the South, transgender teen Adrian Jones just wants to be himself, but he's knocked down repeatedly in seventh grade.
It was March of my seventh grade year, and I was tired. 3 more months of being bullied seemed like an eternity, and I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to push through it anymore, and I didn't want to be alive anymore, and honestly, it felt like I was dead already. And so, at 13, I began planning my suicide. 9 months earlier, I had realized that I was queer. It was something I had known for a long time, but had never had the words to explain. I was excited and terrified all at once. For me, the discovery was like a lifeline. It was an answer to so many of the questions that had been swirling around in my head. To be honest, up until that point, I don't think I'd ever even heard the word queer before. But now that I knew, I wanted to tell everyone. I was about to start seventh grade at a brand new school, and I was aching for a sense of belonging. The thought of finding like-minded peers was exhilarating, and within a couple of months, the entire student body knew that I was one of the only two openly LGBTQ kids at our middle school. Coming out, first as gay and then as transgender, to my entire school may not have been the wisest choice. It turns out that seventh graders are surprisingly brutal, and the situation was only made worse when I began dating Rex, the only other queer kid I knew. Our school became a battleground, and we were alone. At first, my peers' anger confused me. I was a sheltered kid from a tiny school, and I felt like Scotty had beamed me to a different planet. I didn't understand. I kept trying to find the logic in their actions, and I wasn't doing anything wrong. I wanted the same things they did, to go to school, make some friends, and get through the next steps in my education. My classmates didn't see it that way. In their eyes, I didn't want the same things they did. How could I? I wasn't like them. I was different, other, less than. Rex and I latched onto each other. Both of us desperate for any kind of support or stability we could find as our classmates became more and more aggressive. We were hit, kicked, shoved, and spat upon. We often went home covered in food that was thrown on us during lunch. Rex was pushed down a flight of stairs. A girl attempted to choke me out in the middle of class, then later broke into my locker and threw away everything in it. Their aggression wasn't always physical. Day after day, we were called every name in the book, and I can't say that they were particularly creative. If I had a nickel for every time I've been told I'm going to hell, I'd be a rich enough man to live somewhere other than Arkansas. But the worst was the gym locker room. There's nothing quite like trying to change your clothes in front of strangers while simultaneously listening to someone scream that you're the devil. And no, I was not looking at your boobs, please. If anybody is wondering where the adults were, I'm right there with you. Rex and I received very, very little help from the school faculty. I don't know if they even noticed. And if anyone did, they either didn't know how to help or just didn't care. In all of my classes, I would always try to sit as close to the teacher's desk as I could. I was sure that they would have to notice what was going on if I was sitting right in front of them. But they didn't. They finally had to do something when a boy tried to turn me straight in the back of the school library. I had been kneeling on the floor to look for a book on the lower shelves when he came up behind me and began thrusting and grinding on me. Somebody else held me there by my hair so I couldn't get away. He said it was a joke, but I wasn't laughing. He was suspended for a few days, and then he was back, and he never did leave me alone. I got sick of reporting everything. Maybe I shouldn't have stopped, but it honestly just seemed pointless. I was already ashamed enough about what was going on without having to lay out all the details for somebody who wasn't going to do anything anyway. Part of me had started to believe that what my classmates kept telling me was true. I was unnatural, broken, wrong. I didn't deserve help. I decided that death was my only out, and I began planning. And for the first time, I could see an end, and I was excited. I had eventually come to feel like I was just whining, like I was inconveniencing everybody by talking about what was going on. I felt like a burden, and I was happy to take that weight off of everyone's shoulders. I remember writing letters in history class to the people I loved, telling them that I was sorry, but it was for the best. I truly believed that I was just doing the world a favor, and that this was my only chance to be happy. But while I may have been ready for it to end, Rex wasn't. And when they found out what I had been planning, they told their parents, and then told my parents, which led to me being hospitalized. I didn't want to cause any more trouble for myself or anyone else, so I complied with everything I was told to do and kept quiet and was let out fairly quickly. As much as I hated that hospital, I am so incredibly grateful that Rex spoke up for me when I didn't have the strength to. And I got better. I found hope. Through Rex, I discovered a group called Diverse Youth for Social Change, or DISC for short. There, I finally found that sense of community that I had been so desperate for at the start of the school year. And they gave me a family. And there were people who were just like me, and people who weren't like me but accepted me anyway. That was still hard. For a long time, I was living from Friday to Friday, just hanging around and waiting for the next DISC meeting. But having that to look forward to every week gave me the strength I needed to slog through the rest of seventh grade. I could see an end again, and this one was so much better. And suddenly, school's over. I never went back. The anxiety surrounding it was overwhelming, and after two false starts, I began homeschooling full-time. This past fall, I started working towards my GED. I don't regret leaving. I left to give myself a new chance to be happy, and I am. 4 years later, DISC is still my second home. Rex remains my best friend and one of my favorite people in the world. I even have an internship lined up at CAR, DISC's mother organization, for after I graduate. I healed. I let go. I learned how to love myself again. I made it, and I'm so happy I did.
Adrian Jones is a 17-year-old student from Little Rock, Arkansas. He enjoys baking, reading, and long walks on the beach. So how about our stories and storytellers tonight? Thank you to all of our writers. Thank you to our live audience here at Argenta First Presbyterian Church. And thank you to UALR Public Radio. Tales from the South is presented by Temino's Publishing Company and the Midnight Muse Writing Workshops. Additional support provided by UALR School of Mass Communications, the Writers Colony at Derry Hollow, UALR's Department of Rhetoric and Writing, the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau, the Arkansas Arts Council, and the Oxford American, the Southern Magazine of Good Writing. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Stitcher Smart Radio. You can download and listen to our podcast on our website. We are open for submissions from all Southerners. More can be found at talesfromthesouth.com. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week for another edition of Tales from the South. Good night, everybody.
Writer accommodations for Tales from the South provided by Robinwood Bed and Breakfast in Little Rock. More at robinwoodbnb.com. And the Baker House Bed and Breakfast in North Little Rock. More at bakerhousenlr.com. Live sound and studio assistance provided by the UALR School of Mass Communication. You too can experience Tales in person as a member of our live audience. We're now traveling throughout Arkansas and the South, bringing Tales to your community. Details on hosting a live show, our schedule, and ticket information can all be found on our website, talesfromthesouth.com. Thanks for keeping the art of Southern style storytelling alive. And we'll see you next week on Tales from the South.
partly sunny with a chance of heaven's rain. In part, these clouds hide my sense to maintain, while others protect me from the burning pain of realities under the sun, slowly fusing the perfect tone of this earth as such a phenomenal one, wonderfully crafted in earth, roughly drafted in tone, earth tone.
Is my home. Earth is my tone.